You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Before we get started, Vink, I have to tell you a story.
Okay.
I dropped my Switch.
What?
On a hardwood floor.
Whoa.
Yeah. One of the Joy-Cons just popped right off.
Oh.
I was super nervous. I went and retrieved it halfway across the floor.
Oh.
Investigated the socket, you know, all the joints and stuff, just snapped right back in.
Okay.
No problem. It's a pretty good design that it just kind of pops up outright.
I
wasn't sure how, if it happened, popped off the way it normally comes out, or if it was like a sideways thing, but the thing plays fine. Although I did notice what the final effect of this dropping was.
Yeah.
Is that I'm able to, you know, with a little bit of force, push it out without pushing the button down.
Yeah, mine does that too right now. So, that's because my son's dropped it 3 times, yes.
Well, yeah. Okay, so it's not just me. I feel better now. But I figured it was a good excuse to get the colored ones finally.
Ah, so replacing just the Joy-Con fixed it then?
Oh, well, I mean, I looked at what's broken. There's just like a little sliver of plastic that's missing off of like the square bit that holds it in place. So just kind of like a ramp now. It just takes a little nudge.
Yeah, but as long as it can support the weight of the Switch.
Support the weight of these nuts. God damn it. Yeah, hey, how's it going? Hey, listen.
Not so good.
Oh.
The last podcast we had, it was weeks late.
We promised our fans that we were back.
We promised we'd be back, and we said, we'll be back. We'll be back every time. But you know what? Hmm. We missed episode 2. You know what? That is bad. That's like NBC sitcom fast cancellation bad.
Oh god.
You better have a darn good reason for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm really sorry. So hey, you know how you've told me stories before about, you know, you like riding your bike in Japan and you just get hit by a car, or
it happens,
or
it
you know, happens. run over one of those like really hard cans, and just.
This isn't about me. This is about you.
Right. I shouldn't change the subject. You're right. Well, I had a little biking incident of my own.
Yeah.
As people may know, it is currently winter here in the frozen tundra of Wisconsin.
Probably not, considering how we get the podcast out. It's probably summer for them. Right now.
Oh well, okay. So at the time of this recording, there are ice and snow on the ground. The ice being the important part, and I've been taken to riding my bike to and from work lately. And on the way home, like no kidding, 2 blocks from home, I hit an ice patch. And lose control of the bike from under me, land on my right foot, and my right foot does not stop me from falling because it sort of torques off to the right. And I don't want to describe it in nauseating detail, but let's just say that I've been laid up for a couple of weeks.
It was
a fun story. Like, you know, I got lots of people to help me. Like this couple was visiting. Was in the town because of a funeral and they hadn't quite left yet. And, you know, they helped me, to the hospital while my wife got the kids in the car and the bike back to the house. And, met me there and everything. Oh, geez, I need to give them a call and tell them what's up. I haven't updated them yet. But yeah, so
they can just listen to this podcast.
The nice strangers, not my family. They're quite aware of what's going on.
Okay.
But like as we speak, I've since had surgery to put the broken bones back together, and and recovering, taking out some stitches, and getting a boot, so I can kick some ass, or something. I'm not going to be able to run in a race. I was looking forward to this year. Like the first time I was able to get signed up for it, very difficult to get into. But I can get the t-shirt at least.
Wow. Oh. Okay. Now I feel like a bit of a jerk. But
it's all right. You didn't know. I'm sure you didn't look at Facebook or anything like that.
Social media and I don't get along so well. By the way, it's at Famicom Vic Twitter, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing, though, is I had a lot of time to play some Nintendo Switch games.
And it gave you a chance to switch to those neon legs.
Yeah, they just snapped it right into place.
Yeah. The build quality is good. Hopefully it doesn't fall off while you're playing.
I mean, those two stores kind of parallel in a way I had not realized. It was even the right Joy-Con.
You know the worst part about that story is I think I expressed more sadness and shock that you dropped your Switch.
I'm guessing buying a new Switch or at least the new Joy-Cons would be a lot less expensive than the medical bill I'm going to get. By the way, the American medical system is wonderful. So video games.
Video games. And
so the first thing that happened was that you mentioned I should get Oxenfree when it was on sale for $5. And I think we mentioned that in one of the previous podcasts. Well, I played that one and got it done. And then hot in the heels of that, no leg pun intended, you had me buy another game that was also for sale called Thimbleweed Park.
Yes. Yes,
so now I have played and finished two adventure games in the span of, like, I don't know, a month? And I want to say, what a time to be alive, man.
Right? Right? I mean, and like, as usual, I will recommend games that I have not finished myself.
as I found out just before the show.
Just before the show, yes, yes, yes. I mean, but I can usually tell within about the first hour or something whether it's going to be good and whether it's going to be something I want to play. And Oxenfree's, I didn't know how long the sale was going to be, but I remember playing it and I'm like, Sean would like this game. I should message Sean. You know what?
Yeah, yeah.
On the website, let's put a screen cap of that conversation.
Yes, good idea.
I think we should. Maybe the follow-up afterwards where you confessed, you're like, didn't sleep last night, had to do a second playthrough, no regrets.
You know? Yep, it's all true.
But I'm goodly into Thimbleweed Park, and I when I heard we were going to do adventure games for this podcast today, I quickly beat Oxenfree last night. No, Oxenfree beat me.
Oh, it's so true, though.
Right? I remember laughing at you when you said that you did a second playthrough right after beating it, and I was like, okay, but like an hour into my second playthrough, I'm like, all right, don't make fun of Sean anymore.
That's right,
because it makes him break his leg.
I only have two.
Yes, yes, that's
and I'm
true.
Using one of them to get around still.
As someone who loves adventure games, who always has loved adventure games, oh, wow, what a great time to be alive. And for a lot of people, I know you're thinking, like, both of these games came out last year.
Right.
And actually, Oxenfree might have been at the tail
2016.
End of 2016, yep. Yeah. Yep. So, but like... It like hit consoles and like iOS devices last year, and I know we're late to the party. So if you've already played and beat these games, you know, don't think that we're saying that there's something new, but this is how we both first experienced them.
Well, what's interesting is that, yeah, both of these games are on the Switch, and this has a lot to do with Nintendo doing really well with indie developers lately. But not only that, is that both of these games have had updates since their original, like, PC and whatever other console releases. Yes. And so the Switch versions are, in a way, the definitive versions of both of these titles. And that will, I think, play into how well we received them.
Well, perhaps. For me, though, I think the fact that they are on the Switch and both of them, to a certain extent, utilize touchscreen and in the case of Oxenfree, the HD Rumble features, but makes them very good versions. But beyond that, the fact that both of these games I've played entirely in handheld mode.
Yes, same here. I very rarely was on a television. Never once for Thimbleweed Park, and very rarely for Oxenfree.
Like, Oxenfree would have been intriguing to my girls, but too scary. Heck, it was was almost too scary for me. Like, it's not, but it's not a like a horror. There's no gore, you know what I mean? But like, it is a much. It's the scarier type of scary, in that it just exudes creepiness. You know, it's just like And the sounds and I gotta say, I was playing it in the dark because my kids, you know, were going to sleep. So for the majority of the game, I was playing in the dark on headphones. So like when the audio went weird, it was ugh. Plus, there's sequences where it went upside down where I could actually turn the Switch upside down.
Oh, right. I may or may not have done that, especially since you can detach the controllers and not have that confusing little bit of confusion.
Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Let's talk about both of these games a little bit.
This episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is brought to you by friend of the show, Trey Dorn, and his podcast, Nerd and Tie. Trey very generously donated to us some equipment that we can use in our pre-recorded shows such as these, but also, hopefully, will be of great use in our upcoming live shows, which explains why my mic sounds so much better this week. Did you notice? I bet you noticed. And we are sponsored once again this week by Paul Spicknall. Paul very generously donated to us twice in a row, but still has just the one message for us to read on the air. So consider this my do-over from kind of flubbing it last week. Famicom Dojo is my favorite YouTube channel and podcast. I've been watching since 2009, and it was your show and podcast that caused me to start importing, buy my own Famicom, and even started collecting my retro games. So I just wanted to sponsor you all because I feel you are both great, and it's a thank you to the wonderful work you both do. Man, that is just still as nice as the first time I read it. Thank you again to Paul and Trey. If you'd like to sponsor the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, just head over to littlepodcast.com, click on the sponsor button, and donate. And don't forget to leave us a message so we can say something nice about you on the air. Also, we are still selling t-shirts until they are all gone. Sizes small through extra large are still available, but it's the extra larges and larges that are going the fastest. So if you run out of stock, we will fulfill all back orders if you're willing to wait. So don't be afraid to order. It's probably your last chance.
Well, let's start with Oxenfree, since it's the first one that I play, and we've both beaten it.
Yes, yes.
It's a game by Night School Studio.
Yep.
Like I mentioned, it came out originally in 2016.
Yep.
Can I
give it an aside?
Yeah.
I avoided the game because I thought it was a llama based shooter. No. Okay. What is it? Jeff Minter? Is that how? I don't know if that's. But you know, he did all those games for like the Jaguar and stuff, and like. But he would do like Llamatron, blah 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 blah, and like he always puts the name of like herd animals into his things. You know.
Okay.
He did. You know, because you know he did like Attack of the Mutant Camels and Ox Wars and stuff like that. So when I heard Oxenfree, I just assumed it was one of his games, and I kind of skipped it.
Oh, jeez.
Because I focused on the oxen.
Mm-hmm. Well, naturally. I mean, it did kind of remind me of Oregon Trail a bit.
And the icon, the icon looks like, you know, it looks like one of those like Geometry Wars type shooters because it's all about the triangles and stuff.
Sure, sure.
I didn't know it was an adventure game until I was reading, you know, there were games on sale, and I'm like, wow, this one's really on sale. I'm going to look into it more, and I'm like, oh, download.
Yeah. Yeah, it was $5 when you told me to get it, and I would have gladly paid the full freight of 20 for it easily. So NetSchool Studio was founded by Sean Krankel and Adam Hines from Telltale Games and Disney Interactive. So
yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah,
we're you know this is gonna start getting to some interesting circles here. So basically, you know, Telltale by itself would be enough of the adventure bona fides for me because let me know that the adventure gaming era was back was their Back to the Future game.
Oh, but earlier than that for me, because like Telltale brought back my favorite adventure game franchise at the time, which was Sam and Max Hit the Road,
which was, in my opinion,
was like that like couple year period was like just the height of like adventure games for me. We had the Monkey Island series, followed by Day of the Tentacle, Sam and Max Hit the Road. And then like Full Throttle. Actually, when I say the goal, never mind. It was kind of the tail end of adventure games.
Right, right. That was But
like they were using full. I mean, don't get me wrong. The original two Monkey Islands were great, but like when they started doing the full voice acting and like you know just different kind of presentation there. Once they stopped having cheap deaths and made it more about it exploring the world.
Mm-hmm.
I loved things like King's Quest and stuff like that back in the early adventure game days, but like I don't know, there was something amazing about that the mouse was the tool that you use now, and I don't know, just a wonderful era, and I just loved the LucasArts adventure games, and when Telltale brought back not only Sam and Max but later on Monkey Island,
right?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't exactly the same, but like that's when like phase two started for me, you know. All right. Talk about Back to the Future more. Our fans are waiting for it.
What? Okay. Well, I mean, no, it was really interesting for me because the even though everything was 3D rendered, in a way it was still very much the interface was very much like a 2D graphic adventure.
Oh yeah.
There was just a lot more, I guess, that they were able to do with it. Especially because this was broken up over episodes, right? So you have
I think.
So between like two or three episodes, you're in the same locale, but there's like literally like a different bent on like how you're seeing the area, especially like the town square from the movies. So you're not like retreading the same graphical background every time. There's, you know, when you're there for different reasons, it looks different.
Yeah, yeah,
and I liked that a lot. I don't recall there must have been inventory. I think that there was, but the way that they had sort of modernized and minimized that interface was really interesting to me. So Oxenfree felt like a continuation of that because it was still like in the very kind of like zoomed out. You know, you never get a good look at the characters, unlike Back to the Future where they zoom in for cinematics. Like here it was like imagine that these were pixel art, but now they're just 3D models instead that were made in Unity or whatever.
Yeah, it's very very interesting, and I think it actually worked really well for the game. At first, I didn't like it so much. I was like, "Am I playing Pitfall?" You know, I'm just like, but actually, it made it a lot scarier in certain parts that you couldn't see exactly what was going on. That actually made it creepier.
Sure, sure.
I don't know.
Well, and also, you know, just because your characters were so small, the backgrounds had to be gorgeously rendered, and they are.
Oh, yeah.
Like I could – it was just very, very wonderful art direction. And if you're thinking of things like Sword and Sorcery, between that and the music, that's no coincidence.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Scientific did the soundtrack for both games, I believe.
Yep. And yeah, they share some elements, definitely. Mm-hmm. But okay. So how did I sell you on this game? I can't remember the exact wording.
It was something like it's like Stranger Things but the video game or something like that. And I was like, okay, say no more. And,
yeah.
And by the time I actually got to playing it, I forgot that's what you had said.
Oh, okay.
So as I'm like trying to play and I go to the caves and I'm like, what am I doing again?
Yep.
The setting is that you play as Alex, who is going off with her friends, her high school friends, to this island. I think it's supposed to be in Washington State.
Something like that.
Yeah. That they're not supposed to be at after the whole town closes down because no one lives there except for this crazy old lady.
Yeah.
And they just go to the beach to drink and party and be dumb because they're juniors and senior prom is for seniors and whatever.
Yeah.
And then, this buddy of yours wants to check out these weird caves and you bring a radio to tune into the frequencies and it just kind of goes from there. Like it.
Oh my gosh. I know you're trying to avoid spoilers right now, but it's so like hearing that, like, yeah. Because the first, I don't know, 30 minutes of the game, I'm like, I'm playing I'm playing some like teen relationship simulator. You know what I mean?
Right,
is this, I mean, the dialogue was flowed pretty naturally, I think, like really nice. But I'm like, am I going to beat this one or is this going on the pile of shame? You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, it jabs you like right in the middle of a conversation when the game starts and gives you like basically no time to get used to the controls. But that's kind of okay because you learn that the dialogue. So what's adventure gaming about this is that you always have three options, but they appear above your head as word bubbles instead of like, off somewhere disconnected from.
Yeah.
The scene that's going on. So as long as your character moves around, the bubbles will follow her, and you have only a certain amount of time to pick one of those options or say nothing, which is a totally valid choice too.
And it's like we were talking about this while I was playing the game, and I'm like, I feel so pressed for time, and it's like, well, it's just like when you're making a real decision, you're thinking thoughts in your head of what you could say, but sometimes you don't say anything. So sometimes you just want to listen and let the dialogue play out, which really adds to the replayability of this game because you can't possibly take it all in the first time.
Yeah. And I think it's really fair to say that if not for the dialogue, I think you mentioned this, there wouldn't really be a lot of game because you're usually walking around and then, doing something. But there's, it's like those elevator scenes in Mass Effect where you just talk to your party members the whole time. If you hated that about Mass Effect, maybe you won't like this game so much because as you're like walking around this deserted island park thing, there's just not a lot to do except talk to the people who are around you. And if you're not engaged by these characters, and I was hooked immediately, then you're not going to enjoy this game.
And like, I think if you can't stand listening to teenagers, you might be put off by this game.
Well, 20 something sounded like teenagers, but
20 something sounded like teenagers. Yeah. But like, if that puts you off, because I think they went pretty natural with what those people actually sound like, for better and for worse. You know what I mean?
Right. You got like Ren, who's like the stoner best friend. You got Clarissa, who's the mean girl. You got Nona, who's her shy friend that Ren totally wants to hook up with. These aren't spoilers. These are all like in the first 10 minutes of the game.
I'll tell you a spoiler, though.
I'll
say a spoiler. By the end of the game, Clarissa does explain it all.
Oh my god.
Right? She does. Jesus. I mean, she really does. Oh, sorry. Okay, you'll like that if you've played the game. So play the game, come back and listen to the podcast and acknowledge how clever I am.
You killed me. I'm dead.
Thank you.
Or am I?
Spoilers. Okay, anyway.
Things get real weird real fast. How much do we say without being too spoilery? Because
I think
to talk about the game is to discuss the game. How about I talk about what I like about it? Why I like it as an adventure game.
Okay, go ahead.
So I like the minimalist approach. I liked kind of being thrown into it. You can play it with touch controls, so it's like a true point-and-click adventure, but I spent most of the time using the analog stick to walk around.
I used movement with the analog stick, but I picked up and did my conversation choices with touch.
Okay, yeah, I eventually ended up using the face buttons for that, although it took me a while to figure out how I was supposed to do that. The game... I don't know if the game knew I was doing touch at first, so it didn't give me the hints immediately, or if I wasn't paying attention. I also did, because there is so much dialogue, I did turn on the subtitles, because I didn't want to miss stuff. And then it came to a point, especially when I did play it through again, that I didn't necessarily want to hear the whole bit of dialogue all the way through. Yeah. You are able to skip it a bit. There's no... inventory management per se. Everything's kind of like contextual, so
there's
it's like
no,
if you know
inventory at all. Yeah,
yeah.
If you learn a clue, you don't have to write it down. Mm-hmm. It's remembered by the character when it becomes necessary.
Right. And I do like that. And for those who managing inventory, maybe this isn't their speed, but
yeah,
you do just spend a lot of time walking around and clicking on things. And I guess as a result, kind of like Gone Home, it has been what's the word I'm looking for? It's been sort of characterized as another walking simulator, but this is more like a walking, talking simulator, like an Aaron Sorkin show.
Mm.
I think that's a good comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not... like, it's not action-based. Like, it's weird because there is kind of platforming, but you can't die. You know what I mean? It's like...
Right.
If this game didn't have any dialogue, it would just be the world's worst pitfall game. You know, I mean...
Can you make that jump? Yup.
Yeah.
And your companion will, like, mention how crazy that jump was. And be like, I did, like, 1,000... was it push-ups? What did she say?
Something like that.
1,000 jumping jacks a day. It's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's just some. Now I think there's a point we need to get into, and it's probably why you turned on the subtitles as well, because a lot of the audio that's coming through in this game is radio transmissions.
And
sometimes those can be a little hard to make out, especially if there's any background noise going on. So. So that's why I turn them on, because this game is very much about signals. Oh my gosh, so is Thimbleweed Park.
Mm-hmm.
So many parallels. I didn't even make that connection until right now. Oh my goodness. Sorry, when you come, after you've played both of these games and come and listen to our podcast again, please.
Right.
Please be in awe that I didn't make this connection earlier, but and they're all about like arcane machinery. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but the game, one of the main points, and I can bring this in because this still happens during the prologue.
Sure.
But you have a portable radio with you. And one of the things about this island is it has strange broadcasts that couldn't possibly be coming from the island. As you go through, you're going to be picking up signals from people who there's no chance are broadcasting this live. And there is a lot of... I don't want to spoil too much, but some of them are amusing. Some of them are creepy. Most of them are odd, and almost all of them you're going to want to listen to twice, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
There is a bit of a MacGuffin hunt, well, a couple of them.
Yes.
That ends up happening. So I guess there's an inventory, kind of, in a way.
I guess, but you don't use it for anything. It's
more like story inventory. Like Alan Wake, you like collect these pages. And you learn more about the story of where you are.
Okay, I mean, I can see that, but it works because, it's not really something you collect, but you also are constantly taking photos, and these can shed a little light on what's going on as well, and the relationships going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure this game has tons and tons of endings as well.
Yes, that's why I've played it three times now.
Oh, three. Because because there's stuff that I'm like, I'm looking and I'm listening to the story, and then they'll call reference to it, and I'm like, oh no, I was supposed to be paying attention to that, you know.
Right, right, right.
Because sometimes weird stuff happens, and you're like, why did it happen? And then at the end, you're like, oh, that's why it happened. Oh, I got to play that again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty tight experience. You can get it. You can beat it in less than 10 hours.
Yeah, it took me. I think it took me. I think it maybe took me six.
Okay.
Because I don't know. It would have taken me longer had I tried to get everything, but I didn't realize I was beating the game until I did. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So. And then there's no save states. You can't like go back. That's another thing. This game really is in real time. So like whenever you're in a dialogue thing, you can't go back when you talk, and you can't have the person repeat what they just said. That makes it very un-old school adventure for me.
Mm-hmm.
You can't click on a person to make them say the thing they just said again. It's done. The moment has passed. And at first I was having a hard time with that. But after a while I'm like, okay, that's how like conversation really goes.
Right, right. And you know, your lack of response can be read if it's intentional, as a response by the other characters, and that changes how they think and feel about you, and or it might potentially change how they relate to you later.
Yeah.
And there are different decisions you can make. It's more like if you've played Mass Effect.
I played a little.
Okay. It's less important the choices that you make than it is the kind of character you want to portray yourself as.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then it's more of a role playing game in that way, which isn't very adventure gamey, but it allows this variability and replayability that I really, really enjoy, which is why I'm glad it's so short, because I wanted to go back again and to it again, because I love the story so much, but because I guess we'll save that for later.
Okay. Yeah. No, I see where you're going. So let's move to the next game then.
Okay.
And now, a haiku. Lost in adventure. The sound of clicking echoes. Do you know the way?
All right. Thimbleweed Park is actually one that I had been looking forward to for a while, because I actually followed its Kickstarter. I didn't pledge. I missed it. I started following the Kickstarter after it had ended. But okay. That's sometimes good, because some of those games take so long to come out.
Mm-hmm. 2014 is when this Kickstarter ended.
Okay.
See, this totally flew under my radar. I didn't know it existed until you told me to buy it.
Yeah. And that's another game that I was about 30 minutes into it, and I was like, Sean should buy this game. because you know, I knew he was a fan of adventure games with the whole Telltale series or whatever, and I thought it definitely brought back memories of, well, okay, it's Ron Gilbert who's doing the game, so that's Monkey Island, and it would bring back, you know, the nostalgia that, you know, we both feel for Monkey Island.
So, I mean, that's funny to me, right? Like, these circles aren't very big. Like, you know, he also did Maniac Mansion, which
yep.
I haven't played. And I've never played the original Monkey Island.
What?
Or Day of the Tentacle.
Wait.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You haven't played any of those?
That is correct.
But like, Do you like adventure games? Do you play adventure?
Are
adventure games a new thing for you?
Oh God, no! I just played different ones. Like you mentioned those Sierra Online games. So I played King's Quest.
I get it.
Five.
No. You don't have to lie.
All of the Leisure Larry games.
No wonder. You were too distracted. You couldn't play Monkey Island.
Oh, good grief! No, but there was also the LucasArts games that I did play. So like Indie 256, which is the EXE name of the Last Crusade that they did, which is a game I loved. It came out in like I think 91.
Yeah,
and it was one of the first games I remember that used an actual sound card.
Yeah,
or had the ability to. And this is also a game you can get on Steam, by the way, which is amazing. Yeah. But it has more of the interface that is indicative of what's being used in Thimbleweed Park.
Yes.
Because it has the exact same graphical sensibility, the exact same verb and object interaction. That's kind of like an outgrowth of what used to be the text adventure.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry. I'm just like... I'm thinking like the... Like I'm mentioning these like classics of the adventure game genre, and you're like, "Well, I played Indie and Loom."
Yeah, Loom. Loom is the other one. Loom is the other big LucasArts game.
It is a LucasArts game, and it is referenced in Monkey Island.
Right. So I'm still waiting for that Loom sequel. It's been a long time.
Did you play Discworld or Simon the Sorcerer?
No.
You would really like Discworld. I really think you would like Discworld. You should see if I think it's in licensing limbo though, with the death of Terry Pratchett and everything.
Sure.
I don't know, and like the company that made it doesn't exist anymore. I mean Psygnosis made it. That's probably not how to pronounce it now that I realize it. You know, the company that made Lemmings and Wipeout and things like that?
Sure.
It's probably, you know what? I don't think I've ever heard it actually pronounced. So please write in if I'm saying it wrong. But like that company got bought by Sony and then it got closed by Sony. So like, I don't know who owns that anymore. So, but anyway, find a way to play it. I'm sure you could use DOSBox or something, but that was one of my favorite games in high school. That and Simon the Sorcerer, featuring the voice talents of Chris Berry.
Oh, nice.
You know, Rimmer. Well, actually, Discworld, you should have played Discworld. You're a Doctor Who fan and a Blackadder fan. That's John Pertwee's last role. He played Death. Oh. Too soon. Anyway, and that had from Blackadder. That had what is it? Tony Robinson, who is Baldrick, but he played a number of characters in that game. And of course, Eric Idle as Rincewind. You should play that game.
Oh my god!
I know how you can play it. It got a PlayStation port. You could find it on PlayStation. Yeah,
dude, I'm looking at Ron Gilbert's bio here.
Yeah.
It is incredible. So there are games that he was involved with that I have played that I didn't know.
Putt-Putt joins the parade.
Yeah, that's on here. No, he was the story and design consultant for the Penny Arcade Adventures on the Reigns of Precipice of Darkness, episodes 1 and 2.
Yes, he was.
The cave. He was in the Telltale Monkey Island games, it looks like.
Yep.
Not as anyone who like worked on it, but he was the director on The Cave, which was by Double Fine.
Yep.
You know, also LucasArts alum.
It's a very small world there.
So this is actually made by Terrible Toy Box Inc. as their first title.
Yep.
And this Kickstarter is what made it possible. And man, can I tell you something?
Tell me something.
I got this game on sale for $15 instead of the regular $20.
Yep.
And I'd probably pay $20 for it, but I feel like $15 was pretty good. And here's why I'm not as attached to it as Oxenfree.
Okay, tell me why.
Everything about it reminded me of everything I loved and hated about Classic. adventure games, ooh, the point-and-click graphic adventures.
Ooh, okay, shots fired. Well, you don't know much about classic adventure games because you never played Monkey Jesus. Island or Sam and Max.
Well, I was having okay, flashbacks okay. and not the good kind.
All right. No, it's okay. It's okay. Because, you know what? You'll have time to play those. Put them all on right. your backlog. Put all them right. on your backlog. So anyway. But, no, I agree with you. I agree with you on this. But I think that for me, the nostalgia for old LucasArts games might have been a little stronger because
sure.
I played a lot of them. You know what
okay.
I mean?
Okay.
But it also poked fun at the worst parts of adventure gaming.
Oh, yeah. There is literally a pixel hunt in this game.
Yes, you pick up specks of dust. And that's like a reference to the people complaining that you were basically picking up specks of dust in the original Monkey Island. And so, yeah, they played that up. It just, that was hilarious. And
I picked up every one I saw, by the way.
Did you watch Twin Peaks?
I've heard how great the Netflix revival has been, and I really feel like I need to watch the original
yeah.
seasons before yeah. I try and dive yes. into season
yes.
three.
Yes, yes, that's the way to do
but
it.
Yes, this is what I've heard is that this is a very Twin Peaks like adventure. Actually, I would like to compare it to what I know of LucasArts games.
Okay,
because the Indiana Jones game I played. There's something wonderfully like self-effacing and I don't know, like minimalist about, yeah. about how they approach this game. Like if you don't know a lot about the Indiana Jones, and the Last Crusade movie, it opens, with a scene like of young Indiana Jones played by, River Phoenix, pour one out. And we get to learn about where his fear of snakes comes from, for instance.
Yeah.
Got the scar in his chin, which is an actual yeah. scar that yeah. Harrison yeah. Ford has. You know, silly things like that. And then it cuts to this chase where he's going after the Cross of Coronado on the high seas.
Yeah.
And so how the game handles this is the entire intro sequence is over the train hopping of the River Phoenix part of that movie.
Yep.
And then it just cuts right to Indiana Jones showing up at his university in his archaeologist getup, dripping wet, goes over and talks to Marcus and basically says, "You don't want to know," and goes and gets changed. Like, and that's why I fell in love with it as an 11-year-old right away. It's like, all right, this is the kind of game this is. And there's like a lot of fourth wall breaking. It's just, it's weird. But it's still, like, respectful to the source material. And
yes.
since this is, like, an adventure game about adventure games, Thimbleweed Park, like, it's equally appropriate.
I think I know where you're going with this, because Thimbleweed Park is perhaps a little too self-aware.
Mm-hmm. That was my initial impression, but I got over it.
Like, to the point that, like, it references that it's an adventure game quite frequently. But...
Yes.
But, like, when you look at it, a lot of those games did. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like take Leisure Suit Larry when you died in one sequence and it showed this sequence of constructing a new Larry to come up. You know, it...
Yeah, yeah.
It referenced... It was definitely supposed to be similar to Twin Peaks, but it was also supposed to be similar to something where, you know what, I've made fun of you for not knowing a lot of media this episode quite frequently, so I'm going to give you one.
Oh,
it's also definitely has references to the X-Files.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right away, there are two FBI agents who are investigating a murder,
yep.
and then things get weird,
yep.
Pretty fast.
Which I have not watched.
You haven't watched any X-Files?
Not a single episode.
What? But there's a second. Speaking of revival shows.
Yes.
Yeah, there's like a second season of the X-Files, like. Since it went off the air like 16 years ago now. Dude.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, okay.
I'm letting you have that.
I don't even.
Because I'm feeling guilty that I made fun of you for not having watched Twin Peaks or not played any of the classic adventure games.
Well, I have seen every episode of The X-Files except for the most recent season that's airing right now. And yeah, I mean, it's Agent Ray is very very much supposed to remind you of Scully initially, but then it quickly, you know, no, she's very much her own person.
Yes, yes, yes. But I did like, I liked the being able to switch between the different characters. And by the way, all the characters are great. I like the clown.
Ransom the insult comic.
Yes. But like that switching between the different characters like that, that is very much a nod to the original Maniac Mansion.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I know that much about Maniac Mansion, even though I haven't played it. So and the art style, too, I think is supposed to be very reminiscent, because I'm used to the more realistic, quote unquote, proportions of LucasArts games, not the giant heads thing, which gives you more real set to play with from a pixel art perspective. But I thought was kind of jarring, especially coming off of Oxenfree.
Oh, I suppose so, yeah. And the characters are quite big. What I like is they've pretty much kept that standard, like, adventure game resolution of, like, you know, what is it, like, 320 by 200 or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm not sure
yeah.
if they're doing it exactly, but they're doing amazing things with it. Like, that whole water off, the moonlight off the water, that is a very impressive-looking effect that they managed to do with that resolution and color palette. I don't know. I think there was some very, very cool, like it could have been, like, the game, the whole game is like, this could have been made in 1995.
Right. Yeah, I think Ron Gilbert's thing from the Kickstarter was that, you know, he wanted it to feel like a game from that era that you just never managed to play, which for me is pretty much all of his games.
If it weren't for the constant, referencing of new things, like they're like, oh, that's how it'll be in the future, 2017 or something.
Right.
You know, there was definitely a lot of wink nudge. By the way, if you have played a lot of those early video games, like Maniac Mansion and things like that, there's a lot of references, a lot of posters, a lot of things hung up. Like, there are things that reference those games too.
Right. Right. I have these mixed feelings about pastiche as art because you know Stranger Things is very much like that, and it's like
I really like
Stranger Things, but I don't feel like it needed to take place in the 80s for me to like it, until people pointed out to me, well, this is the time before cell phones and the internet and all those things that would take it for granted now, and the story probably wouldn't work in the modern time. And I feel like this game is the same way, because while there is, in this particular case, a period appropriate cell phone.
Yes.
The idea that this game probably wouldn't work as well if everyone had a smartphone on them.
Yes.
Although I could see that working also.
I mean, I get that. Although, like, I agree with you with Stranger Things. Like, I remember it was recommended to me. They're like, "Oh, you were born. You lived in the 80s. You'd love Stranger Things." And I'm like, "Hey, it worked. That's what got me to watch it in the first place."
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah. I mean, the story. But I don't know. I think I have not beat Thimbleweed Park yet. Sorry, but we revealed it earlier.
Yeah. Shoot, sorry.
I'm sorry. But it's not my fault. It's Xenoblade.
Right.
At the time of this podcast, I've put 125 hours into that game and I haven't beat it yet.
Okay.
So,
it'll take you much less to do than a Wii Park. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going through it kind of slow because, and this is something we should probably talk about. One of the nice things about Thimbleweed Park is that it has a built-in hint system.
Yes.
So if you really get stuck, you can use that rather than how I used to cheat with the adventure games when I first was playing them, which was to go down to Walden Books, go over to the guides, and take a peek, maybe have my little notebook with me, copy a couple things, and then, go home until I got stuck again.
Oh, man. Like that, I'm glad you brought that up because that hint system was sort of my guilty secret.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a secret, but I used it way too often, either because of lack of time, or just, you know, there were a few instances where there was something I didn't grab out I should have grabbed. I didn't notice it existed. So I was glad for it in those cases.
Did you play on hard mode or easy mode?
Okay, yes, that's also a good point. There are many settings to this game. There's a casual mode, there's the hard mode. I went for the hard mode because I figured that's the version of the game that really people should be playing if they're playing a game that's an adventure game pastiche.
Well, to tell you the truth, I went for the casual mode because then I feel a replay will be more fun.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because with a lot of adventure games, you know, depending on the choices you make in your conversation trees, you're not going to get every answer.
Interesting.
You know, so adventure games I almost always replay. They're one of the few types of games I do replay, just so I can get the different, you know. So I figured I was going to replay this, and I thought if I was playing it just and I already knew everything, it would be pretty boring to replay.
Okay. Well, I'll give you this warning then from reading some reviews is that the easy mode, still leaves in some items that have no purpose in that mode.
Okay.
So you might get stuck thinking you have to do something that you don't.
Apparently, you can also turn off some of the in jokes.
Yeah. If you don't like the fact that it takes place in the 80s and all that stuff, you can turn that off. You can also change the way the toilet paper rolls are flipped, apparently.
Yeah, that is so... I could not figure that out. I had to look online. I'm like, what does this mode do? because some people like it the other way.
Distraction otherwise.
But apparently both of those are updates related to criticism of the game received once it was released.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Apparently, and sadly, from the latest thing that I heard... Now, this was before the Switch port came out, but the game did disappointing sales and basically means no further adventure games. But who knows? Maybe everyone listening to this podcast will pick up the game and it'll get the sales it needs.
Well, in that case, yes, you should definitely pick it up. Man, so I mean, you know, I did finish it. I soldiered on through it because I did like it. I got frustrated when I got stuck. Apparently, that hint line is also a late addition to the game that just came last year, I think, or late last year.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
So you know, the Switch version is the complete version in that regard. But like strategically figuring out who has a phone or who has the cell phone, who can get to a phone to call the hint line becomes kind of part of the game.
It does.
And there are other reasons for using the phone that don't have to do with the hint line that also, you know, make that work.
And I think, I mean... Let's go back a little bit because we never actually talked about what Thimbleweed Park is. It is a point and click murder mystery.
Yes.
And it is done exactly, in the style of an old LucasArts game, including having your verbs listed on the bottom of the screen. Mm-hmm. So you have to, you know, give tin can to thing. You know, you have to construct these little phrases in the same way that, Monkey Island or Simon the Sorcerer or things like that did. And the story gets weird because the town is weird. And through the course of the town, you'll be switching characters between these two detectives, a clown, a young computer whiz, and all of them have their own stuff going on, and you know, it's all taking place in this very, very small town, and there's a sheriff who looks a lot like a number of other characters.
I have a love-hate relationship with that gag.
Because
the game, you know, the characters are aware of it. And like the cover the guy gives, is ridiculous and kind of annoying. But I don't know. At this point, I just find it charming.
It's funny. I also like that sometimes they'll take a joke way too far.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever keep clicking on the reasons you shouldn't go to the diner?
No.
if it starts off like weird, like you're clicking through, like, but nobody eats there, and then he says as an aside, botulism or something, but like it keeps going on or whatever, and after a while it's like scurvy. It's like boogers or something. Like it's so you have to keep going and going and going over the, and finally after doing this for, it must have been 20 different dialogue things, finally he goes, so why do you eat there? And he's like, 20% police discount. I don't know. Like, I think there's a lot that even in my first playthrough I haven't encountered. You know.
Uh huh. Well, I went. Yeah. Have you been to the post office?
No.
Okay. The postal worker there will tell you postal worker jokes, and I have gone through all of them.
Okay. But like, it's, I don't know. I think that if I came into it as a gamer who had no nostalgia for the 90s, that definitely it would take some getting into to get with the game. And I think in that way, Oxenfree is a much newer, fresher approach to adventure gaming.
Right.
So how do you think it compares to something like, let's complete the circle now,
sure,
Broken Age?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you want to talk about Double Fine? Apparently, Ron Gilbert directed The Cave, which I also love.
Yes, that's another game that's kind of an adventure game, character based, but not your typical adventure game.
Right, right.
Do you want to talk about The Cave for a little bit?
Just a very little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, there are multiple characters you can select from the beginning. You can only pick three to go with you. And then you go into the cave, and the cave is, like, literally an allegory, if that makes any sense. Like, it's an allegorical cave that you literally have to go into.
Yes.
To plumb the depths of your character's souls, which are all, in their own turns, quite dark. Most of the game is the same. There, you have to have your characters cooperate to make progress, but they're all ready to stab each other in the back at any opportune time. So everyone has their own sort of special power to make that progress. And there's always a way to get through it with the combination you have, but you have to figure out what those combinations are.
Yes.
But there's also specific areas for the backstory of each of those characters that are unique to those characters' playthroughs. So that's also a good game for replayability and funny dialogue and ridiculous MacGuffins and puzzles and stuff like that. I don't think there are any really red herrings in that one that I can remember.
No.
But that was a game I had a lot of fun with.
I bought it during a podcast once.
Yeah, right.
You convinced me to buy it during the podcast, but I bought it for, like, the wrong platform or something. I don't remember.
Oh, no.
But,
oh, no. Well, I got it on Wii U.
That's the thing. Like, if you're listening, Double Fine, stick that thing on the Switch and I'll buy it again.
I think they might be. Oh, boy. I don't know.
It's not.
I'm thinking of Cave Story. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Every time I mention Cave Story, people think I'm talking about The Cave. And every time I mention The Cave, people think I'm talking about Cave Story. Seriously, guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Double Fine Adventure is, a.k.a. Broken Age, is like the game that started the whole Kickstarter, let's make a video game craze, right?
Yeah.
So then Thimbleweed Park comes on the heels of that like a couple years later. One year later?
Several years later. I mean, definitely.
2011
like,
was? I don't remember. When was that?
Broken Age?
Yeah.
Because
Broken Age came out in early 2014.
Yeah,
so it took like 3 years.
2011? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Yeah, Thimbleweed Park launched their Kickstarter after Broken Age was out, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But not much really on the heels. The one that came right on the heels of it was the Leisure Suit Larry reboot.
Yes.
And which I have. Also Space Venture.
Mm, yes.
And the new Tex Murphy adventure game. The new Mean Streets, whatever. I haven't played that one yet, but it looks great.
So, yeah, Kickstarter has been a great renaissance for this kind of thing. And, like, I loved Broken Age through and through. And I know people were upset that they had to break it up and that they decided to break it up into two parts.
Yeah.
But they were able to do something with that. And I think we mentioned this in those previous podcasts.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, episode 81. Man, that was a while ago. But kind of like how they patched in things to Thimbleweed Park, the second half of Broken Age was able to address the criticisms of the first half. Sometimes in funny ways, sometimes in kind of mean ways.
I'm trying to think if I prefer the style of Thimbleweed Park or I prefer the style of Broken Age. Because what's going on here is there's two schools of thought. Because both of these were backed with the idea that people wanted these greats, these legends. Mm-hmm. You know, Tim Schafer from Day of the Tentacle, Monkey Island, Grim Fandango, Full Throttle fame, and like Ron Gilbert from Monkey Island fame. They wanted to see what these guys could do if they were given the chance to make a game again. And Ron Gilbert, after making The Cave, which was a very new type of game, he also made Deathspank.
Oh.
Which was not an adventure game. So I have it. I enjoy it. Like, it's got very funny cutscenes, but the game itself is not an adventure game, so I lost interest kind of quickly.
Okay.
But anyway, they wanted to see what would happen. And I guess Al Lowe as well, although his involvement was a little less. But they wanted to see what people would do if they were given, you know, the chance to do a game again. And Thimbleweed Park is Ron Gilbert going, I would make it exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Tim Schafer's like, I will continue to make it a point-and-click adventure, but it's going to be quite different.
All right, I think if you ask me, I'm firmly on the side of continuing to modernize the adventure game and making it more accessible, which some people are probably going to say just makes it more dumbed down. And less interesting and more of like click to win, which I guess I can't argue with too much.
That's the same criticism they leveled on the Monkey Island series in the first place. You know what I mean? Because compared to a Sierra adventure game, they were pretty much click to win. I mean,
sure.
they were tough as nails to figure out the puzzles sometimes. That stupid safe puzzle from the first Monkey Island. You if you've played Monkey Island, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, the one that correlates to the paths. Oops, spoilers. Sorry. Anyway, don't worry. If anyone hasn't played it, they have no idea what I'm talking about. But they were hard, but at the same time, like a Sierra game, you could die in. So like consequence, you know, you had to save often. And, okay. You know, your choices had consequence. So I think I'm just happy that adventure games are still being made. And really, what I'm most happy about is there's enough room for both.
Right. Like, I think if people make more games like Thimbleweed Park, I'll probably think about playing them. But I definitely prefer more of what Oxenfree has been doing, what Broken Age did, because That felt like the good happy medium actually, between being kind of a game on rails and having to solve puzzles, but not having the sort of dated interface that was that step between graphical and text adventures that Thimbleweed Park uses. But since Thimbleweed Park built that deliberately, knowing it was dated, they did some very interesting things. Like there's a character who has a despair verb, which I never get tired of. but at the same time, I think I mentioned that like it also got into some of the same kinds of problems I didn't like about those kinds of games, which is that it kind of trains you not to do things. So the way especially because it all does take place in the same locales over the course of the entire game. The only thing that changes is, like, there are these distinct parts it's cut into. Like, you'll see a title card for it. I don't know how far you've gotten into Thimblewood Park so far.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But every time that happens, you got to think to your... You got to remember, and this is more of a tip than anything else, you got to remember that whatever you thought you could or couldn't do in that first part no longer applies, and you should try it again. Because I trained myself to think, I can't do that. That can't be the solution to this puzzle, only to find that, oh, that building's open now, or, oh, that character feels differently now, or, you know, this inventory item can be picked up now.
Well, to tell you the truth, though, that's kind of how those late 90s games were, though. Mm. I mean, they really did kind of get to that point. Okay. But this is great, and I don't know, like, what's Telltale making these days? They're making Walking Dead stuff, which I haven't played. I've heard
that was good. We both heard that was good from Rob Matsushita when he was on the show. And
yes.
Oh no, that was a while ago.
We should really have him back.
We should have him back. Well, he told me that he'll come back when I finish that game, and well, I've let you down, Rob.
Oh man, there's a lot of ball dropping today. The scene in Oxenfree with the ball. Right?
Oh, so good. Our reviews have been very spoiler free, but there's so much I love about Oxenfree that I can't talk about. Okay, let's just say this. There's a new game plus, and when you get far enough in the game, you're going to understand why there's a new game plus and how appropriate that is. And that's also something that wasn't part of the original release. What was so if you ever played the game again,
oh, really?
You have that. Yeah, that came late.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That came just last, like, in 2017, I want to say.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems so vital to the game experience now.
Yes.
Oh, that's crazy.
I mean, that's a whole other topic that we could get into about how early adopters are little more than paying beta testers. And usually pay the most because that's after the game drops in price.
Yep. Yeah.
But that's, yeah. Ooh, we should do that topic.
Let's do that. I like that topic.
That's a good topic.
Sean, you should play Maniac Mansion.
Yes.
On the NES.
On the NES, yes. I agree.
It's not the best version, but it would fit with our show.
Mm-hmm.
And you should go on Twitch and stream yourself doing it.
Oh, God. How am I going to get my NES onto Twitch? I've had a problem with anything less than like a composite interface going online.
Oh,
I meant component out.
Oh, component. Okay. What can you do? Can you do from HDMI?
I'd have to have a converter of some kind. We'll figure it out.
I'm just, because you can get the Retron 5 and that outputs to HDMI.
Oh, I see. Well, I mean, that might be worth it.
We'll think about it, but I'm sure everyone would like to see you play Maniac Mansion. I would like to see you play Maniac. You know what? I never beat the NES version. And I hear it's quite different. I hear it's different enough that it's worth playing by itself.
Interesting.
Because they had to censor it so very much.
Oh, I suppose. All right.
And that some of the censorship is actually funnier. And there's two different versions of it, apparently, out.
Really?
Or I might be wrong here, but apparently in the early ones of the games, you could microwave a hamster, and Nintendo did not like that was in there, and in later prints of the game, you could not.
Okay. Interesting. So there's a potential holy grail out there. Well, you know, Midwest Gaming Classic is coming up in April. I will keep an eye out.
Ooh, I'm going to send you a shopping list.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. But anyway, adventure games, they're back. And the main thing that I want our listeners to do right now is with this whole renaissance of adventure games, I'm sure we missed a lot of them. I didn't know Oxenfree was an adventure game before going into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how many other games I've missed that have kind of flown under the radar. So please, tell us your favorite ones and tell us why you like them. Also, I'd like to mention about just one thing I really liked about Oxenfree were the references that I doubt a lot of people were picking up on.
How so?
The game referenced the disappearance of Bobby Dunbar, which I just finished listening to a podcast of on This American Life.
Okay.
Also, Also, you probably heard something that sounded like Bugs Bunny's voice in the game, right?
Yes. No, I think I knew what that was. That has to do with some like World War II stuff that Mel Blanc did, right? There was a character. I forget the name of the character, though.
It's Private Snafu.
Thank you.
Private Snafu, and it was done uncredited by Mel Blanc, the voice of Bugs Bunny. They're all in the public domain right now. You can watch them on the Internet Archive. I think some of them were lost to time, but they're actually any kids listening, please don't watch it. There's actually, even though they were made in the 40s, there's some pretty bad language and some nudity, actually.
Wow, all right.
Because they were not meant for general public consumption. They were meant for soldier training films, and they needed to keep the attention of the soldiers, and they were meant for internal use only. They were never meant to be broadcast, and I don't think they ever have been broadcast on TV unless there was some documentary about them.
Sure.
But a lot of them have leaked to the internet now, and they are in the public domain, and since they're in the public domain, that's why Oxenfree was probably able to use clips of them.
I was wondering about that. Okay.
Whereas if they tried to use Bugs Bunny, they would yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Because Private Snafu does sound an awful lot like Bugs Bunny.
And they would have been made at the time that the messages in this game were said to have originated. You know what? That's not a spoiler, because that comes really early in the game.
Yeah.
But for anybody who's kind of a... Play Oxenfree.
Yeah.
And you don't have to play it on the Switch. Switch is a great way to play it, but it's available on everything.
Oh, it is.
And so if you don't have a Switch, you should still... I still recommend finding a way to play this. If you do have a Switch, that's the way I played it, and the HD Rumble is amazing and actually really, really enhances certain sequences that I don't want to spoil.
To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Denchi Mail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more.
The only other thing I wanted to mention was, almost 10 years ago now, I did a little video called, Top 5 Adventure Games of the Aughts. What is an aught, you ask? Well, it's the number zero. it's a fancy old-timey way of saying the number zero. 20-09. And not a single one of them was an adventure game. Now, I mean, this was pre all these things. This was pre Broken Age. This was pre The Cave. This was pre Back to the Future, even.
Yeah.
Right? It's not to say that there weren't adventure games during that time, but there weren't certainly, that I could think of, any really popular ones. The games I talked about were Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, Fable 2. I think Mass Effect made the list. Halo 3 ODST, and people got real mad at me about the Halo one, but my defense is that there are so many like strong adventure, like story based things that those games did that made me fall in love with them. Like I think about, and I'll probably bring this up when I do finally talk about Samus Returns, like the Super Metroid is a great game, not just because it like enhanced the Metroid and Metroid 2 mechanics, but because there was this great story attached to it that was really subtle, but like permeated the entire thing. And like, if it were not for that story, then like the final fight would just be another, you know, Samus versus Mother Brain retread. And instead, like, there's an emotional gut impact. And like all of ODST felt like that. Like it was a Halo game because you had to shoot things and kill them and whatever, but there was, you know, there were these MacGuffin hunts. There was the story within the story. There was an AR game, kind of like the whole I Love Bees thing, with Halo 2, I believe. Like there
two or three, yeah.
there was all this stuff in there that was like phenomenally wonderful. And I you know, the criticism I got was that you can't redefine the adventure genre just to make a video about it, to which I say, bull, watch the video. I'll link it in the show notes. See if you agree. It's something that I did for Powat TV at the time, and I'm still really proud of it because I think it's kind of fun and funny, and I talk about five games I really, really still love to this day. Oh, the fifth game was Eternal Darkness, which I mean that's a very adventure gamey. You know, adventure is still an adventure game, if you ask me. Is Zelda an adventure game?
I don't know. You know what? I was having that's a topic. Write that down.
Okay.
I was having this conversation with someone, whatever, who said like, they're so glad that there's all these RPGs out now, like Breath of the Wild, and I was like, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, yeah, okay, that's another topic.
Yeah.
We should get an expert to join us for that one.
Who would this expert be?
I don't know. Maybe you, the listener, are an expert on RPGs. Please let us know if you are. But anyway, yeah, that's another topic. But yeah, I think the whole genre thing is like is definitely shifting. It's definitely shifting. It's like what is changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and now that we actually have, you know, modern adventure games that are built as adventure games, and
yeah.
I feel like in a lot of ways incorporates these things that I liked about these pseudo adventure games. I don't feel like I was too off the mark, just ahead of my time.
Yeah, you trendsetter.
Mm-hmm. Watch that video; it's good.
It's because of witty content like this that we are pretty much guaranteed to still be monetized through the end of the year.
Oh no!
That's YouTube.
That's another topic. Also, no one worry about us.
We're fine.
I assumed that no one was worried. Like, why would you be? It's like, oh, you know, it wouldn't stop us.
Yeah. I mean, we did this for the first few years. We didn't make any money off this anyway. And the next few years, we lost a lot of money.
Yeah. So,
what's
the difference?
We're gonna keep making this.
Yeah. No problem.
I gotta say, during this whole podcast, I was checking the clock and going, do I have time to get in another playthrough of Oxenfree before I have to pick up my kids? The answer is no, but I'm still going to play it. I'm still going to play it.
And you all should too. And let us know what you think in the show.
Yep. Notes. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I guess until next time, then the dojo is...
Climbing through a main character's window to the sound of guitars.
Oh, sweet.
That is a Clarissa Explains It All reference. Welcome to the
Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at illustrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded.
Famicom Dojo.
Hey, you want to know a cool connection?
Yeah.
Clarissa Explains It All. Poster on her wall, that's the Flood logo from They Might Be Giants.
No.
And in the early episodes, she made a video game every time because she was a computer whiz.
No, I don't remember that.
Watch season one.
Oh.
Yeah, forget Twin Peaks. Watch season one of Clarissa Explains It All. That's where the connections are going to come from.
Hey, what's your favorite movie? This week it's My Favorite Too, even if it's Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is the story of a big city bouncer with the secret power to rip people's throats out who comes to a small town full of really dumb people to be a bouncer there.
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network.